10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling on Sunday. It's a radio show on a Sunday night. There's no other radio show made for Sunday nights. All the other radio shows are made for, like, Thursday. And then they have the audacity to call it a best of. And now we have a best. We have no best ofs here. We were honest with ourselves and said, really, is there anything that's, like, best? Is there anything we have the audacity to call best? No. There is.
We are fighting for the gays of Hormuz right now.
Respect to them. They need us to fight for them. I'm with it.
Gays of Hormuz are being attacked.
That's not cool.
Not good.
I'm a straight guy, but that's not cool.
Yeah, they're going for the straights of Hormuz, but they're not willing to protect the gays of Hormuz.
You see, I'm a straight guy. I'm an ally.
What do you think when you do see a penis?
When I see a penis?
Yeah.
No. Never seen one other than my own.
Sterling on Sunday. Proud to be sharing this time with you and with some of our many quality advertisers.
100 cars an hour come to Caldwell Township, New Jersey, bringing sudden riches as a liquid bonanza of mineral water gushes from the earth. Thousands flock to pay 10 cents a gallon for the fluid. Health-giving water transforms a well into a gold mine. Entire families come to carry away a supply for a week. Users testify to the water's magic properties.
Just stay in line, please. Right out that way, madam. Thank you.
Listen to the testimony of Miss Mary Sable.
3 weeks ago, I weighed 145 pounds. Now I've started drinking the water. I lost around 20 pounds and I feel grand.
The owner takes in $1,000 in a weekend. And is it good? She'll say so.
Walter Sterling, bringing you the very latest news. The latest news.
Breaking news. Everything is bad. It's just as terrible as you imagined and probably worse. With more, we go to Tom Lee Cruz. Tom Lee.
We're all in danger, Dan Lee.
What can we do?
Absolutely nothing.
It was good knowing you, Tom Lee.
I can't say the same.
That was unnecessary. We're just now getting in reports that all the children have exploded. They will be missed. Let's check in with Olivia Lee Rodrigo. Olivia Lee, where are you?
That's none of your business. Do you hear that? Cut the music. Do you hear that?
What do you hear?
That's the sound of us slowly dying. Can you hear it?
I can hear it. It's louder in my left ear.
Olivia Lee Rodrigo reporting
from where I am. I actually have some more questions for you. Okay, we're going to go to Kevin Lee Costner, who has more with politics.
No, I don't.
Let's send it over to our senior correspondent, Nick Lee Minaj.
Look at this chart. Let's bring it up.
What am I looking at here?
I don't know, but it doesn't look good.
That looks bad.
Yeah, it's probably bad.
Let's go to our eye in the sky, Timothy Chalamet. Timothy.
Man, I am so high up right now.
You are in a helicopter.
I didn't know that when I got in. I thought it was a weird car.
What do you see up there?
Everything. It's too much. We were never supposed to see this. I need to go back down.
You stay right there.
It's remarkable, isn't it? And the devices that our kids use today, that's what's ruining them.
Do you believe television is making our children lazy?
Sometimes. But it keeps them quiet when I'm doing the housework, you see.
And it's time for the Beech Nut the Beech Nut Caravan of Stars.
Welcome to our weekly fun and excitement of general musical goings-on. Here at the Little Theater on 44th Street, west of Broadway. Beech Nut Spearmint, the gum you have made your own, brings you the show you've made your own, the Dick Clark Beech Nut Show.
Come along, and nice of you to join us too here at 44th and Broadway. We're flying high tonight.
Well, Dick Clark flying high.
White privilege is the ability to deal with suffering without blaming another ethnic group.
Ladies and gentlemen, those are the actual sounds on shortwave that only were heard with the beginning of the Iran war. It is not Morse code. It is a new CONET signal. It is a new number station. A new number station. Did you hear it? Yeah. And did you have a mother like this?
I grew up where somebody told you to keep talking. They wanted you to shut up. If they told you keep talking, that meant shut up now.
A Jersey mom. Did you have a Jersey mom? There are Jersey moms all over the country, but they're a very specific type of mother. I keep having to adjust this knob here because I left my earphones in another city. There's nothing more terrifying than that, buddy. I left my earphones. I left my earphones in another city there. I think we're good now. Why am I adjusting all these things on a network show? Because this is authentic. You know, the idiots in marketing magazines talking about, all right, now what people want today is authentic. Well, yeah, and how is that different than, say, during 1930? Why didn't people want things that were authentic then? Of course they wanted things that were authentic then. Now, it apparently can be packaged up and made to seem authentic. That doesn't have to be really. They want it to be authentic. Well, whenever I see slick, whenever I see something that's really well done, that's not authentic. That's professional grade. Professional grade is good for tires and motor oil, but I don't really think you want it for radio stuff. See, I keep adjusting this. Maybe it's that. Is it this? Test. It's one of these. Well, anyway, I try to make it as authentic as possible. And that means that your job is to buy Zelman's Mints. This is not a commercial, but I want you to try Zelman's Mints because these are the only mints for people who don't care if they have bad breath. People who are alone all day. If you're alone all day, if you prefer solitude to parties, you want Zelman's Mints. I use them through the show because they make my mouth fresh and it makes me happy to talk. Sometimes you could talk and you're like, oh, why, God, my mouth, but not with this. Z-E-L-M-I-N-S. Go to Zelman's. This isn't a gag commercial. This is a real commercial. Z-E-L-M-I-N-S. Z-E-L-M-I-N-S. Zelmans.com, put in the promo code Walter, and you'll get a discount. But more importantly, you'll get the first mints made for introverts. The first mints made for us, allowing our breath to feel terrific and happy all day when we're alone or when we have to go out and deal with other people, which is never a good time. It's never a good time. No, I know. Let's see, what else? I have an email. I answer all the emails. It's Walter at, hold on. It's Walter at, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com.
The lesbians in space, the other side of midnight.
Lesbian hair, perfectly styled lesbian hair. Oh, I wish I could have been there to see that perfect lesbian hair.
You and I are going to hear about an amazing phenomena, which is one of the good things that AI is able to do. We're going to be able to talk to whales. The whale brain is bigger than the human brain. As best the scientists know, it is the only brain bigger than the human brain. It is the only brain with more capacity than the human brain. It has also evolved for longer. It has evolved for millions of years. It has evolved since the dinosaur. In effect, the whales were dinosaurs, and they decided to hang around. Their brain has evolved. Their brain keeps getting smarter, and they have a very complicated, subtle language. Those little clicks they make, each one of those clicks is different, and other whales can understand them. And now it's time for us to understand them. You and I will find out about the phenomena of whales talking and our ability, thanks to AI, to talk back to whales. I think that's all pretty cool. I think that's all pretty cool. Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sterling every damn night from sea to shining sea.
Sterling on Sunday, Walter Sterling. My gosh, look at this. Here we are on 81, I-90, the 4, the 5, the 101. Congratulations. Congratulations. You found an actual radio show made for Sunday. But of course, we can't forget about the Anasazi. What? We can't forget about the Anasazi. That was that beautiful, incredible Indian tribe that you learned about on the History Channel and maybe even at school. That was, they were brilliant farmers. They were sweet and kind people. And then they disappeared. Now, why did they disappear? Why did they disappear? It was, you know, it was blamed on plague, foreigners coming in, the Spaniards, and they no longer exist. Well, it turns out some brilliant scientists got Anasazi bones, and they studied the DNA, and they studied it repeatedly. And when they had the findings, they gave it to other scientists who also studied it, and they were all amazed and said, "Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody what we found out about the Anasazi." And then they did the experiments again from scratch. Over 2 or 3 years, they studied the DNA. They studied all of the material that they could find at their sites, their buildings, their houses. They looked for all of it. Now, in the X-Files, it said that they built their fortresses to protect themselves against UFOs. They were in the middle of the dentist, in the middle of the dentist, surrounded by nothing. There was nothing near them. And as a result, they built fortresses, they built huge walls, all of the above. And that's why they disappeared. Well, it isn't why they disappeared. And why they disappeared is both fascinating and terrifying.
Men, women, children, infants, processed identically to the way Chacoan hunters processed deer and rabbit. Even then, many researchers argued that processing did not prove consumption. The bones showed butchering. They did not show eating. A body could be dismembered for ritual purposes, for witch execution, for punishment of enemies, without the flesh actually being consumed. The distinction mattered. The gap between butchering and consumption was where the debate lived for more than 20 years. The gap closed in 1997 at a site called Cowboy Wash in southwestern Colorado. Excavators found the remains of 7 individuals processed according to every one of Turner's 6 criteria. And in the hearth at the center of the community, alongside the cooking vessels, they found something else, a coprolite. Desiccated human feces, preserved by the dry desert climate, deposited at the scene of the processing. The biochemist Richard Marlar took the coprolite to his laboratory at the University of Colorado and designed a test for a single protein, human myoglobin. Myoglobin is found only in skeletal muscle. It does not exist anywhere else in the human body. It is not present in the intestinal tract of a person who has eaten plants or animals. The only way human myoglobin can appear in human feces is if one human being has consumed the skeletal muscle of another. Marlar ran the test 6 times in triplicate across several weeks with every possible control. Every result came back positive. Cannibalism at Cowboy Wash was no longer a hypothesis. It was a biochemical fact, confirmed by a test that had never before been applied to the archaeological record. And once the evidence at Cowboy Wash was accepted, the broader Chacoan pattern fell into place.
The Anasazi were eaten. The disease resulting from cannibalism, the diminishment of the population, the Anasazi who escaped as fast as they could, that's why it dispersed. That's why the Anasazi no longer exist. It was because of cannibalism from a tribe that came up from the south, took over their lands, took over their culture, and imposed their religion on them. And their religion included the drinking of blood, the eating of human flesh. Now what do we have? We have Epstein. I don't like talking about Epstein because everybody does, but they always talk about this other thing. You know, who was involved? Who was involved? Who was involved? And I'm more interested in 2 things. Where the hell did he get the money? It keeps saying he was a financier. This is no financier. This is a blackmailer. This is a man who took videos of other powerful people who were so arrogant that they believed they wouldn't be caught, that nobody would notice. It's the crime of arrogance of all the participants. And you have to start to think, why would these men and women so rich and so powerful participate in dealing with underage kids and all of the other aspects of what they did. And the answer is probably even worse. The answer is probably they ran out of things to do. When you have billions and can have anything you want, you run out of things to do. And the things to do include buying your own jet, multiple mansions, seaside mansions, all of that. Well, they had all of it. Now what? Oh, look at this. And then, hey, have you ever tried this meat? Have you ever drank this blood? Why should I drink that blood? Well, because it'll make you look young forever. How many centuries have been spent by rich people, by the elite, looking for ways to stay young forever? This is just another one on the list. Blood that has been transformed because of an enzyme, a chemical in the body that makes it different. This blood is different. And allegedly, if you drink it, you look young and you stay fearless. Well, if you have billions of dollars and you can protect yourself from any sort of blackmailing, any sort of trouble, well, sure, I'll try the blood. And that was the transaction. That was the transaction. That was the business that Mr. Epstein was in. And they haven't even begun to excavate and detective his ranch in New Mexico. They haven't even begun to look at all the stuff this guy did. It was just terrifying.
8 million, up to 8 million children a year are vanishing. Many of them are being tortured to create adrenochrome for that blood high. All right, so there's a lot of great evil going on. Having said that, Hillary Clinton sold Yemen and Syria to Saudi Arabia. She sold Libya to France, and she sold Uranium One to Russia. And she had 30,000 emails, many of which dealt with her pedophilia adventures, okay, with the Podestas and so forth. The wealth is actually concentrated by the banks, and the banks are using war as a profit center, and they're manipulating currency and stock exchanges, interest rates, to basically treat the 99%, the deplorables, as cattle. The Great Depression was contrived by the banks with the complicity of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The Great Depression was contrived in order to destroy the middle class that was seeking additional political power, to buy up America at depression-level prices, and to consolidate banking control over the U.S. government. All of the suffering in the Great Depression was contrived by the banks, right, just as wars today are contrived by the banks.
I grew up where somebody told you to keep talking. They wanted you to shut up. If they told you keep talking, that meant shut up now.
And then the first time we ever heard about an elite being a cannibal, possibly being a cannibal, was Army Hammer. Freaking Army Hammer.
It's almost like a neutron bomb went off in my life, right? It killed all the people. It killed me. It killed my ego. It killed all the people around me that I thought were my friends that weren't. People called me a cannibal and everyone believed them. They're like, yep, that guy ate people. It was bizarre. It was a crisis, a spiritual crisis, an emotional crisis. And the way I saw it was, I have two options here. I can either let this destroy me, or, to the point of your podcast, I can use this as a lesson. In terms of my career as an actor,
Sierra Sterling on Sunday. Congratulations. Everybody has found the show. If you want to write to me, I write back. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Do I have a corporate email address? Why no? And I answer them, unlike these other hosts. What's fascinating is you and I have been talking about the Anasazi, the famous Indian tribe in the great American Southwest that built magnificent building, had remarkable abilities with architecture, star alignment, understanding astronomy. And for a long time, it was believed that they built their buildings in the middle of nowhere to protect themselves against UFOs, against aliens visiting them. It was several episodes of The X-Files, including the finale and the movie, kept referring to the Anasazi as a place to protect themselves from UFOs. Well, it turns out that actual scientists did a study to find out what did eliminate the Anasazi, because they were clearly brilliant based on their architecture, their geometry, their math. It was remarkable. And we'll find out exactly what made them disappear in just seconds. But now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Mateus Boom Boom from Hollywood on Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Thanks so much, Walter. Always a pleasure to be with you on Sterling Every Damn Sunday. Your pal Mateus Boom Bell here, and as you said, thank you for the introduction. I am here to talk about movies and what's new in the theaters this week. And what's new in the theaters this week is The Devil Wears Prada 2. Yes, a sequel after 20 years has reached the theater screens last Friday, and already it's doing tremendous business. Globally, it's made over $40 million. And that's giving Michael a little run for its money. Michael, of course, continues in the top spot with over $130 million in the U.S. and Canada, and has been a really high-producing picture, and fans love it because it's really like a Michael Jackson concert that you watch and groove to, and a very, let's say, entertaining movie, not necessarily a prying film about the Jackson later controversies. But that's already opened, and we've already talked about it on this program, so let's look to this week with The Devil Wears Prada 2, which picks up right where the other one left off, but 20 years later. 20th Century Studios, that's a Disney company now, offers this sequel, and The Devil Wears Prada 2 finds snarky Miranda Priestley, played again by Meryl Streep, with her character's demanding and unapologetic nature firmly on display when a social media disaster threatens Runway Magazine, which is operated by Meryl Streep's character. Andy Sachs, Miranda's former assistant of 20 years earlier, played by Anne Hathaway. She's now a journalist, but recently fired in a corporate sweep at her newspaper, is brought in to help clean up the social media mess of Runway and set Runway back into the public eye on good footing. Returning also are Emily Blunt as Emily, Miranda's former assistant and now soon-to-be rival. Fantastic Stanley Tucci, who nearly steals the show, is also in the picture. You know, he always plays gay parts so well. He's not a gay actor, but he really knows how to do this kind of a part with just the right amount of finesse and aplomb. Let's just put it that way. Also in The Devil Wears Prada 2 are Justin Theroux, Kenneth Branagh, and Lucy Liu. Since the movie is about haute couture, real stars and designers of the fashion world may be seen in cameos, as well as famous runway models. And one of the biggest musical stars of today does a musical number at a fashion show for Runway Magazine in a setting set in Italy. The Devil Wears Prada 2 is everything fans of the first movie would want it to be, a superficial fun frolic of fashion and ambition. But I don't think it's quite as memorable as the first. In fact, it's really sort of a movie that it's in tribute to the first movie. So if you really like the first one, you're going to like this tribute film. I guess we could call it a tribute film more than a sequel. Of course, the crazy world of haute couture is something that never has interested me. I'm fairly a frump when it comes to wearing clothes, and the wild outfits that they wear are just out of this world. I mean, no one actually buys those outfits. Where do you see people wearing those large bags of plastic with pointy things that shoot up into the air? But it is a glamorous world, and of course, famous celebrities like to be seen at the debut of these various runway shows, and it captures sort of the mayhem of all of that very neatly and succinctly. And I think that's why The Devil Wears Prada 2 will be just as much fun for the fans of haute couture and high fashion as the first one. And of course, Meryl Streep is without peer. Everyone seems to love Meryl Streep. I haven't met a person yet that has a negative thing to say about Meryl Streep, and I'm certainly not one of them. So that is The Devil Wears Prada 2, and it is now playing everywhere and I think you'll have fun seeing it. Next week on this program, I'll be speaking about the new movie, The Sheep Detectives. It's got a great cast of Hugh Jackman, Nicholas Galitzine, Emma Thompson, Molly Gordon, and Bryan Cranston. So it should be a fun whodunit of the Irvine world. If you'd like to find out more about what I'm doing with classic movies, old movie theaters, or other reviews of films not covered on this broadcast, you may find me at my Facebook page, Matthias Bombal's Hollywood. That's MATIASBOMBAL, apostrophe S, Hollywood, like the city, Matthias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. Well, thank you so much, Walter. Always a pleasure to be with you on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sometimes it's nice to hear an old guy complaining on the radio.
Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, the greatest conspiracy is the UFO conspiracy, not because there are UFOs that are hidden, not because there are aliens that are hidden. It's in plain sight. A U.S. congressman a few weeks ago said, I know about alien-human hybrids being made to enable us to better understand aliens. Well, if the reason the government, and it is the government, that is trying to create human-alien hybrids to better communicate with aliens, what does that mean? It means that we have aliens. It's like, what? Why is it a secret? I believe it's a secret, not officially announced yet, for two reasons. One is profit. And the profit motive is that many high-tech companies and many high-tech companies in other countries would like to purchase that technology, that it is used as leverage in our relationships with other countries. The whole leverage is not we'll shoot you. The leverage is we will or will not share this technology with you. This is old leverage. It has always been used. It was used when the atom bomb was created. Oh, these countries are allowed to have the atom bomb. These countries are not. What? How do we decide that? Oh, we decide that because we invented it. The Russians figured out how to make one because they also borrowed German scientists after World War II and put them to work. They have the atom bomb. Who else has the atom bomb? Russia. I'm not aware of any other countries that were allowed to have the atom bomb. When Iran started to make noises about having the atom bomb, well, you know what happened. You and I learned about something we didn't know till very recently. We learned about the Straits of Hormuz. The Straits of Hormuz.
We are fighting for the gays of Hormuz right now.
Respect to them. They need us to fight for them. I'm with it.
Gays of Hormuz are being attacked.
That's not cool.
Not good.
I'm a straight guy, but that's not cool.
Yeah, they're going for the Straits of Hormuz, but they're not willing to protect the gays of Hormuz.
You see, I'm a straight guy. I'm an ally.
What do you think when you do see a penis?
When I see a penis?
Yeah.
No. Never seen one other than my own.
We are fighting for the gays of Hormuz right now.
Respect to them. They need us to fight for them. I'm with it.
Gays of Hormuz are being attacked.
That's not cool.
Not good.
I'm a straight guy, but that's not cool.
Yeah, they're going for the Straits of Hormuz, but they're not willing to protect the gays of Hormuz.
You see, I'm a straight guy. I'm an ally.
What do you think when you do see a penis?
When I see a penis?
Yeah.
No. Never seen one other than my own.
Lesbians in space, 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 the other side of midnight. Lesbians in space, space, space.
So you're a lesbian, you want to date a girl.
Yes.
But the girls that you guys usually date are very masculine and dress and act like guys.
Yes.
And masculine women who dress and act like guys are basically guys.
Yes.
So you want to date a guy.
Yes.
So you're straight.
No, I'm lesbian.
Ladies and gentlemen, the only radio show that features lesbians on a regular basis. And you must ask yourself, why does Sterling on Sunday do lesbians in space? Why are they in space? The original title was too long. The original title was Lesbians in Space Who Wear Sports Bras. Lesbians, space, sports bras. What do you want to listen to at this time of day? Research is very clear. You want information about sex. You want information about space, aliens, and sports. That's all anybody wants to talk about now. I combined it, as does the WNBA, the WNBA, Lesbians in Space, who wear sports bras. They all wear sports bras. And on the SYRN, Siren, website, you will find spectacular sports bras modeled by Sydney Sweeney and her friends. Sydney Sweeney and her friends. It's spectacular. It is spectacular. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Here's something you don't hear about every day. An exotic dancer getting arrested. Not only being arrested, but being fired from her job. Her name, yes, and her first name is a stripper name, is Princess Alaya Bell, 23 years old, quite a hotsy-totsy, and she was on the staff of Taboo, and it's a wonderful nightclub in beautiful North Miami Beach. She got fired and lost her temper, so what did she do? She went right after one of the stripper poles. She grabbed it and tried to stab people with it. She was jousting. She was running at people with that wonderful pole, trying to fight the manager and other dancers. And apparently, she was using excessive profanity. Excessive! She was running through the club, creating disturbance. She was throwing things as well. You can't drop a colorful metaphor at a gentleman's club. I don't know what's wrong with our country. It's a great time to go do that. The manager, who did get hit in the leg by the stripper pole, said she felt moderate pain, but refused to be medically cleared by Miami-Dade Fire Rescue. And quite frankly, I'm going to give you a little tip. You get hurt at work, no matter what it's for, even being attempted to be disemboweled by a stripper pole. Yeah, you want to make sure that you're okay. Because workers' comp may kick in. And you may have a wonderful time just collecting unemployment and thinking about your coworkers while having a martini every day. Being disemboweled by a stripper pole does not seem like that much fun. But, hey, there are worse ways to go. Are there? Okay, very good. From the champagne room, not fearing for my life. I'm Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling, every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
It's Sterling, every damn night. He's on every damn night.
He takes to the air without a care and does his nightly shows. And the Midnight Misfits all tune in for reasons nobody knows.
Sterling on Sunday. Sterling on Sunday. Our president had a press conference this week with the astronauts that flew around the moon. And there they were in the Oval Office. There they were in front of the press corps, the Washington press corps. All of the Fox Newses and the CNNs and all of those people were there. And there were the astronauts that just flew around the moon. And they saw something you and I have never seen and never will see. They saw the back of the moon. How many press reporters asked questions about the back of the moon? None. How many asked, when are you going back again? How many asked, how did you feel about orbiting the moon? How did you feel about going into space? What do you think we should do next? What were the challenges of being in space? None of those questions were asked. None. Instead, CNN said, what do you think? Do you think we'll be out of Iran or out of Ukraine first? What do you think? Oh, wait, these are, here are three people who have seen the other side of the moon. I'd like to know if they saw any buildings. I'd like to know if they saw any evidence that there ever was any structures, if there ever was civilization. I believe that the moon is an artificial entity. It's a perfect circle. It is hollow. All of the craters look like a movie set, and they're all the same depth. Nothing gets any deeper on the moon. Well, that would suggest that the surface is made out of metal or something that can't be broached. But I don't understand how the Washington Press Corps, not one of them, could say, and Mr. President, you promised us to release UFO files. You promised to release UFO files. You promised to release files about the aliens. When are you going to do that? There they were. Spacemen, real spacemen standing there, and none of them asked any of those questions. And those poor guys, they were, in fact, American and science heroes. They did something heroic and insanely dangerous. The odds of that rocket blowing up under them, really high. The odds of them coming back, really low. Many, many challenges just to get up there and make a circle and come back and see what they could learn. Reinterest in the space program. The press had the opportunity to reinterest an entire generation in the space program if they had asked the astronauts questions about space. Instead, they asked the president political questions about, did the farm bill pass today? Or the ability to change voting districts. Now, wait, we have people who've seen the other side of the moon. I know. Let's ask about the change in voting districts. That's what one of the reporters asked about. Did you know that the voting district change law was enacted today? Really? Said the president. How'd we do? Oh, we won? That's great. And then they talked about that. Hi, what about the other side of the moon? How pathetic. Really pathetic that that's the best they could do. That was the best they could come up with. It's pretty sad. There wasn't one science reporter in that room. Why didn't they have Popular Mechanics there? Why didn't they have Consumer Reports there, which have actual science reporters? Scientific America, where was that reporter, Caroline? Where was that reporter to ask science questions? Instead, the room was loaded with the usual suspects asking the usual questions, as though people who had been on the other side of the moon weren't there. Shame on them. Shame on all of them, because if the room had been loaded correctly with the correct reporters from the correct publications, we would have learned a lot about the moon. And I wanted to learn about the moon. Instead, we didn't get to learn a lot about the moon. We get to hear nonsense. We get to hear the usual nonsense. I'm Walter Sterling, and you're listening to Sterling Every Damn Sunday. Email WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Sterling Every Damn Sunday. Sterling.
Sterling every damn night. Sterling across the USA. The people of Walmart.
Biloxi, Mississippi. Biloxi, it's a beautiful place, it really is. And it is the home of a woman named Gladys Renee Harrington. She's been picked up with embezzlement. It looks like it may be over like $25,000. She could do some time in the Hooskow for a long period. She frequently was writing checks from the Touchdown Club. Yeah, the Touchdown Club, which I believe is a booster club for prep sports, for little boys and young men playing football. And there are a lot of people who care about having well-funded football programs much more than well-funded schools. But that's another
conversation. So Gladys, she was going around town writing checks for, yes, cash. Yeah, cash and getting cash. And she spent a lot of time at your neighborhood Walmart. Walmart is the best place to go with your embezzled cash money. You can go in and find great food items, fashions, electronics, and of course what I like, and Gladys does too, I believe, outdoor gear, you know, for fishing and for archery and all that sort of stuff. The Mississippi coast, where this wonderful woman is from, and of course she's innocent until proven guilty, yet she is perhaps a victim of being able to write a check. A lot of people, if they think they can get away with something, they do it. That's why many companies, especially if it's over a certain amount, they require two people sign off. And apparently the South Jones Touchdown Club didn't have it. Gladys Renee Harrington, she's going to be away for a while and missing out on some of the great values you can find at your neighborhood Walmart. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool, Sterling every damn night.
On a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free, as he plays his kazoo, my love,
Sterling.
Sterling every damn Sunday. Good evening. I'm Walter Sterling. Let me talk a little bit about this Autism Awareness Month. It's an Autism Awareness Month. I'm sitting there with my daughter, my 20-year-old bisexual daughter. And I said, you know, it's Autism Awareness Month and our Samantha. Da, da, da. And I started to talk about it, which was a mistake. And she looked at me and she said, Dad, why are you talking about Autism Awareness Month when last week was Lesbian Visibility Month? Last week was Lesbian Visibility Week.
Lesbians in space, the other side of midnight. Lesbians in space.
I think that's like a requirement. If you're a woman and you want to be a PE coach, then you have to be a lesbian. Because every case scenario, every school I've ever been to, any grade I've ever been in, I've never seen a straight woman PE coach, ever.
Sterling every damn Sunday. There's never been a straight PE coach. My lesbian bisexual daughter says, why didn't you do Lesbian Visibility Week? And I'm like, well, that's a really good idea. In fact, it's the sort of thing that I could turn into a whole year. We could have a lesbian visibility year. It seems to make sense. This is one of the greatest scenes in any movie ever.
I like it that you understand me. There are things that I don't have to say because you just know how I feel. Nice.
That's Christy Swanson. Remember the original Buffy in the movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer? That was Christy Swanson, who went on to be nude in a Playboy and then is suspiciously disappeared. Now, who was in the scene with her? A genius casting director and a producer with a rich fantasy life made this movie happen. It's Christy Swanson and Jennifer freaking Connelly making out. I'm just going to be quiet for a moment so you can think about that. Jennifer Connelly and Christy Swanson making out. You and I can't even think of something that remarkable Something amazing. Now you want the movie, don't you? I freaking can't find the name of the movie.
And the red, white, and blue.
Christy Swanson and Jennifer Connelly. It's one of the powers of radio that just by me saying that eliminates any problems. You know exactly what I'm talking about and exactly who I'm talking about and why I'm talking about it. And I hope you're alone in the car or the 18-wheeler because it's the best time to listen to the radio. There you are alone. Here I am alone. We get to talk one-on-one. It's very special. Do you feel special? I thought so. The interesting thing about a Sunday night is it's both the end of the weekend and it's the beginning of the week. I know that sounds deep and profound, but hey. And each can bring powerful emotions. You may absolutely not want the weekend to end, or you might. Many a folk want the weekend to end because they've had quite enough of domestic life and can't wait to get back to the 18-wheeler, can't wait to get back to the store and run their life and run their business. It's a very different thing. But then there are people who absolutely don't want to go to work. And for them, it's a depressing, sad Sunday night. I don't know which one you are, but I do know that you're a introvert. If you're listening to me, what? Stop. If you're listening to me, you're an introvert because you and I, we're alone right now. We prefer to be alone. It's a very interesting way to live, but that's who we are. And introverts are, it turns out that there are, it turns out there are many phases of introversion. It turns out it isn't one thing. For years, decades, the belief was, okay, you're an introvert or you're an extrovert, but it turns out that's just not true. There are many phases of introversion. There are many phases of extroversion. And there's a new one called, what is it, outroversion. And outroversion is this. You like to be alone. You need to be alone. You need downtime. You definitely need downtime. But you don't mind being out with other people, whereas a true introvert hates being out with other people because it's depleting. It depletes us. It makes us tired. And who wants that? Nobody wants that. We prefer to be very much alone and inside. That's our challenge. Whereas outroverts, they're happy to be out with people, but they need the downtime in order to do it. They absolutely need the downtime. That's a little different. That's a little different. Walter Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday. And I enjoy spending this time with you.
You're fine for exactly 2 hours and 20 minutes at social events. Then suddenly you're wanting to commit crimes. This isn't random. Introverts have measurably different acetylcholine metabolism that depletes after precisely 2.3 hours of social stimulation, creating genuine neurological exhaustion. Extroverts run on dopamine from external stimulation. Introverts run on acetylcholine from internal processing. Social interaction burns through your acetylcholine stores at 3 times the rate of solitary activity. After 2.3 hours, you're literally running on empty neurotransmitters. The exhaustion is as real as running out of gas. Plan every social event around this window. Arrive 20 minutes late. Leave after 2 hours. Your brain stays functional. Push to hour 3 and you'll need 6 hours of recovery. Pushed hour 4 and you're destroyed for 2 days. The ratio is exponential, not linear. But here's a recharge hack. 10 minutes alone in a bathroom, completely quiet, resets your timer by 45 minutes. Not checking your phone, that's stimulation. Complete sensory deprivation. Your acetylcholine partially regenerates with zero input. Your 2 to 3 hour limit isn't rudeness. It's neurobiology. Leave before you hit empty.
Many women say they want a man who leads.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment he makes a decision, they start correcting everything.
He plans a weekend trip and you say it's not good enough. He fixes something at home and you redo it your way. He tries to solve a problem, but you step in and say, just move. I'll do it myself. When that happens, many men simply step back and let the woman take over everything. That's not how it should be. He spends the whole day working, dealing with stress and responsibilities. But when he finally comes home, the first thing he hears is criticism. He suggests a place to eat. She says it's a bad choice. Mm-hmm. He makes a plan for the weekend. She says it's not good enough. After a while, he stops trying to lead. Not because he's weak, but because nothing he does ever seems right. If you want a strong man, don't tear him down every day. Mm-hmm. Respect builds a man. Constant criticism slowly breaks him.
This video is a funny example of liberal hypocrisy.
Would you agree that undocumented migrants deserve a place to stay in the United States?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you guys agree. I actually have a couple of undocumented migrants with me today. Since they deserve a place to stay here in our country, would they be able to come home with you?
No. I only have a one-bedroom little condo.
No, we're not going to do that.
Why not? They deserve a place to stay.
I'm not going to, like, just have somebody come into my house that I have no idea who they are.
Can they come home with you?
No. Well, I have to speak to my partner. I couldn't just make this decision right now.
It's not my responsibility.
No, it's mi familia.
But it's not my responsibility. You have family. You have places you can go for support. That's, you know, there are places. There are shelters.
You are one of those places, ma'am.
So thank you. That I take care of. Well, yeah. But not my family.
Isn't that insane? Isn't that incredible? Not my family. Yeah, they want them. But, oh, no, you have family. You have places to go. No, they don't have family. They don't have places to go. That's why they're homeless. The primary cause of homelessness is not drugs and it's not money. It's an inability to have a relationship with their own family. Because if you have a relationship with your own family, at some point, some member of your family is going to say, come and stay with us. That's the relationship that's most vital for our success as human beings. Isn't that amazing?
This is the show that's setting the trend. Across the nation, it's setting the trend. It's the bright, exciting sound of Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night.
It's the Sterling Show, Sterling Every Damn Sunday Night. Welcome to the Big Network Radio Show. How does it feel for you? Is this working for you? Because there's nothing else on a Sunday night. That's my key advantage. Is that no one else is making anything else on a Sunday night. Walter M. Sterling@gmail.com. Walter M. Sterling@gmail.com. This is National Autism Awareness Acceptance, National Autism Acceptance Month. I have a 14-year-old daughter who's autistic, and that means nothing because autism is different with every child. I work with a young man who's a terrific guy in every way, and he's a brilliant writer, reads a lot, all that stuff. Good conversation. Has trouble hearing. When he was a kid, he had so much trouble hearing, they removed his adrenal glands and they put in tubes to connect his mouth with his ears. I said, how's that going? He said, well, sometimes the tubes fall out. My daughter hears better than I do. Has an incredible sense of smell. She smells stuff. I don't smell it at all. She is extremely social, extremely verbal, but she reads at a first grade level. She handwrites at a preschool level, and she's 14. Her autism manifests itself in academics. Socially, she's incredibly extroverted. You will be her friend. Her mission in life is for you to be her friend. She's charming, and she's a con. She knows how to con you into liking her. Everyone's different. Every autistic child is different. And that's one of the reasons why the public schools are terrible at teaching autistic kids, because they're not set up for it, and the teachers aren't trained for it. With all good intentions, they're not set up for it. For all good intentions. We sent her for a year to a special school just for autistics, and that helped her dramatically. But understand what that meant. There were 8 kids in the classroom. There were at least 4 teachers in each classroom, and that's what was necessary to deal with the individual nature. Her classroom went from her, outgoing and social, to another kid who it took them a half hour to get out of the car. He sat on the floor, stared at the wall, and occasionally would yell. It's nonverbal. He was verbal. He just couldn't have a conversation. It's different with each kid. And when you say, you know, does our kid school help autistics? In my opinion, public schools should not help autistics. They should not even try. Teachers aren't taught how to deal with autism. They're taught how to deal with the broad concept of autism, but they can't. They can't because it's not one kid with autism. It's five different kids with autism, and they're all completely different. Now, the public school systems in most cities and states like having autistic kids, and they like having special ed kids because they get more per kid from their states for having those children. They get more money. Does all that money apply to my child? Well, no, it didn't. It's the darndest thing. In our public school, she was having a terrible time in music class because her hearing was so sensitive, it was painful for her. And I said, well, get her out of music and give her more reading. She can't read. She's 13. She can't read. Oh, well, and this was my favorite conversation in history. Oh, well, one person can't decide to take a child out of music. That has to be a team decision. A what? That has to be a team decision. Well, what do you mean a team decision? She can't be in music. She doesn't read. Get her out of there. And that's when I ran into the bureaucracy at its worst case, when you have a vice principal making life or decisions. And I've had callers, people who are principals, and they say, I'm a principal, and here's this and this. And I say, wait a minute, I know who the worst person is on your staff. What? Whoever is the assistant principal. Oh, how did you know? I can't get rid of them. They don't follow my directions. They undermine me, blah, 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 blah. The assistant principal. You know, when I was in school, there were no assistant principals. The principal was in charge, and that was that. Yes, that was that. But you see, now with more and more state regulations and federal regulations and requirements, the need for bureaucracy becomes profound because of the amount of things the schools have to implement, the amount of rules there are to implement. That's the challenge. That's the challenge that every public school has. And then we put, as I said, we put her in a school for autistics. And the first year, the public school system said that they would pay for that. And the second year, they did not. And we were idiots to sign that agreement. We were idiots. All right, Walter M.
The other side of midnight.
I can't get married. The thought of my fiancé's touch sickens me. I'm a lesbian. I'm a lesbian. Oh, my God, it feels so good to say it out loud.
Hey, babe.
Hi, honey.
The buck, lesbians in space, space, space. The other side of midnight.
Malibu Barbie is not pretty.
I mean, she's just, like, basic, you know, like she's just like generic looking. She's like generic pretty. She
could possibly be the most beautiful person I've ever seen. No, seriously,
I just wouldn't be into her is what I'm saying. I don't think she's pretty.
Walter Sterling, this is Sterling every damn Sunday night. Good evening. We're driving across the country. I want to know where you are, and I really want you to take a picture. If you're working on the third shift, the great shift in the warehouse, I'd like to see a picture of your break room. Break rooms are very seriously undermanned, understaffed, understood, poorly understood, poorly understood. It's interesting that beautiful work floors, beautiful offices, beautiful businesses, when you see the break room for the employees, they are always a dump. I pass them at Costco every now and then. The door opens like, whoa, oh, my God, whoa. They're terrifying. Now, I'm sure the psychology is, well, we don't want people to be taking breaks. That's not what we're here for. We don't want people taking breaks. We don't want it to be too comfortable. You should want people to fight to get into that break room because it makes them feel good about who they work for. That break room should be spectacular. Fun games, beautiful art on the walls, many, many free snacks. That's what it should be. It should be a magnificent place for workers to go to on a break. Instead, everyone I've ever seen appears to be furnished by Goodwill on a bad day, or maybe the lounge furniture from a dorm room that's been shut down or condemned. That's what the furniture always looks like. And they don't have snacks in there. They should have snacks. But, oh, by God, do they have legal notices? Every conceivable legal notice is in there. Any problems? Oh, my God, they have problems in there. And then we have to deal with parents who actually think this device problem, getting the devices away from their kids, is new.
Do you believe television is making our children lazy?
Sometimes. But it keeps them quiet when I'm doing the housework, you see.
It is immoral and I think illegal for any school to say to your kid, you have to turn over your phone. We have to keep your phone during the day. It's not their phone. The phone does not belong to that kid. It belongs to you. The kid's under 18. You have lent the kid a phone, but then a stranger is asking for your phone without your permission. It should be, it is illegal for them to use your phone. I don't understand how this is perpetuated. I don't understand how this has gotten away with. Walter Sterling every damn Sunday night. Sterling every Sunday night.
Everything is swinging. Everybody's singing. Sound of Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, it's about a quarter to midnight. The great shift, you and me, exciting. A coast to coast. Yes, that's right. Different time zones, Walter. It's almost midnight on the East Coast, almost 9 p.m. on the West Coast with Walter Sterling. This is a national radio show for Sunday night. It's made for Sunday night. It's not a best of Thursday for a Sunday night, which should be illegal. It should be illegal. Speaking of illegal, the president, the FCC, has decided to consider and take a look at the licenses of ABC. Well, first, some things need to be understood that's important to understand. Networks are not licensed by the FCC. Networks do not need a license, have no license. You could start a network right now. There's no legal issue, TV or radio. You could start a network right now. The challenge is over the air. A radio station or a TV station that puts out a signal over the air does need a license because the airways are viewed as public. They are owned by all of us, and therefore they have to operate. You put a radio station or TV station on over the air, you have to operate in the public interest because those are the public's airwaves. That's the deal. ABC is owned by, the ABC television network is owned by Disney. There's no FCC license. None. The FCC has no control over the content of the ABC television network. However, Disney does own a smattering of TV stations, really big TV stations. Pretty much every Channel 7 in the top 10 cities, WABC in New York, KABC in Los Angeles, KGO in San Francisco, those are all Disney-owned stations, and they're all over the air. They are licensed, but they're individually licensed. They're not licensed as a group. Each time those licenses expire, which are 7 years, those stations have to go to the FCC and reapply for a renewal of that license. And in that process, the FCC looks for you to demonstrate that you're operating in the public interest. It does not ask you what political point of view you have. It does not ask you if you have a stupid comedian on making stupid comments. None of that. Because the premise is free speech, and the only speech that isn't free is slander. I can't say something about somebody that is not true and therefore commit slander. That's an offense. That's an offense I could be taken into court with. That's a offense I can be taken into court with. The other thing I can't say is there are like six dirty words I'm not allowed to say, which is weird because they can say it in Australia. These words do not harm Australians. The first time I got into a taxi in Australia, first words I hear was a guy cursing like crazy. And I don't know, the Australians are still alive. Nobody died as a result of this. We're pretty damn Puritan when it comes to the words we can say and not say on the radio. It's weird. But on cable, you can say whatever you want. You can use all those words on cable. You can all use all of those words on satellite radio because these are closed systems. They are not over the air. The FCC can rattle the saber all at once. Well, you know, we're not going to necessarily renew Disney's licenses. Well, there's no grounds. There are no grounds for that. A late night comedian making a stupid joke, no grounds. But what I don't understand about the late night comedian making stupid jokes in the uproar is why is he getting all this free publicity? He's in heaven. This is the most publicity he's ever gotten. It's insane how much publicity he got for saying one word about one person. Boom. Amazing amount of publicity. Well, you know, it must be a very big show. It's not a very big show. It's not a very big show. In most big cities, New York, Chicago, L.A., in most big cities, the number one morning show has more listeners than any of those late night shows have viewers in that city. In that city. It is safe to say that 1010 wins in New York City and Morning Drive has more listeners than Jimmy Kimmel has viewers at night in New York. Pretty safe bet. That's amazing, isn't it? Therefore, shows like Kimmel's and others, they're pretty obscure. You bet it's been a long time since you watched it. Why would all these radio talk shows give all of it that much publicity? I have never talked about it. I regret talking about it now, but that's what's so bizarre. That's what's so damn bizarre, right? Walter Sterling. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of okay radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling every night, lost in space. Mission control. Dave's not.
Walter Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday night. It is a little past midnight in North America on the East Coast, a little past 9 on the West Coast. Good evening, Walter M. Sterling, with the great Dave Scott, who will explain all things UFO for you and me. Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio, a Canadian, Spaced Out Radio, Dave Scott.
Thank you, number one. It is always a pleasure to be able to share the airwaves with you. And it's actually good timing because literally about half an hour ago, I got out of the Canadian forest here, the Cariboo region of British Columbia, where I live. And we were out at our secret area called Flight 21. Now, back in 1965, Canada's largest unsolved mass murder happened when a bomb went off on a DC-6 plane about 30 miles outside of my little town here in central BC. Now, if you listened last year, I did a lot of investigating out there looking for Sasquatch and other sorts of creatures that should not exist, but seem to exist anyhow. So I figured before we get into the UFO story tonight, I would actually tell you about what happened this evening since it's fresh on my mind. And literally, it was a beautiful night, probably about 71 degrees out in the forest, which is very warm for this time of year for my area. We got there probably around 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, where we were literally just hanging out, doing our thing. Now, at that place, we have what we call a gifting site. It is believed that if you have a gifting site in a Sasquatch area, that they will actually trade items with you. Now, last week, we noticed that a Canadian dollar coin, which is called the loonie, had gone missing. The loonie still has not showed up, but this week, a quarter had moved. Now, it had moved only a few inches. The reality is, it could have been a crow, it could have been a raven, it could have been a squirrel, a chipmunk, or something else in the area. So we really don't have definitive proof on how it moved, but the Canadian loonie coin is still missing. So what we did tonight is we actually put up some trail cameras, so that way, if we see anything moving, hopefully next Saturday when we go back out into the field, we will be able to actually see something on camera. Let's hope. Now, I don't know if I'm really good at setting up a trail camera, but we're going to see if we're going to get some clear photos of maybe something moving through. Now, the interesting part about it is we actually did find about 4 footprints. They were about 10 and a half inches long, and they were extremely wide, about 3.5 inches at the heel. Now, I was talking to one of my Sasquatch research friends, Robin Haynes, about this right after we got out of the forest, and she said that those are what we call juvenile tracks. So what is a juvenile track? Well, it's like a teenage Bigfoot, maybe a little bit younger. And those prints were walking through the trees. We were able to follow the tracks for about 4, there were only 4 of them that we were able to see in a span of about 30 feet, 35 feet. They were in the moss. They were unfortunately not castable, but we did get them on camera. Now, they were heading into the deeper part of the forest, and a lot of times it's very interesting when you find these childlike footprints, except this one obviously not being like a human child, like something a little bit bigger, and we were able to actually see which direction it was going. So that was quite amazing right there. Now, the biggest track I have ever found is about 19 inches long. Usually in this area where I go, the tracks are usually between 15 and 17 inches long. So this one was actually quite smaller than what we were used to. So next week we'll have an update on how the trail cams actually performed, and hopefully we'll be able to report that for you as well. Now, getting to the latest UFO story as we continue on, I do want to get to the point that last week there was some sort of meeting in a skiff, which is a secret access room that does not allow electronic devices in. You're not allowed to have your iPhone in there. You're not allowed to have your Apple Watch or anything like that, any type of smart device. And Representative Eric Burleson and Tim Burchett were in there. They were talking UFOs. And one of the big points that came out of that meeting was that the American public would be shocked if they learned what the United States actually has. The problem that we have with these meetings and these congressmen right now is the fact that they tell us that we're going to be shocked, but they never give anything evidentiary to actually say what it is. But apparently they learned in this meeting where locations of where craft are being kept, as well as alien bodies, or I don't even know, maybe even live aliens. But it just seems like they keep pushing this narrative. You would be shocked. You would be amazed. You would burn the world down if you knew. That's a quote from Tim Burchett a few weeks ago. When are we going to get evidence? That is the big question. I don't see the evidence coming out very soon. I think they're still going to stall on this on aliens.gov. But the big thing is they keep talking, they keep bragging that they have all this information. But unfortunately, because it happens in a skiff, which is a private meeting, you, me, and the rest of the world do not get to know about that. But we just got to hear the highlights, which actually say nothing. I want to thank you, number one, for having me back on Sterling every damn Sunday night. If you wish to follow Spaced Out Radio, please do so at spacedoutradio.com. You can also find me on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio. We're on every social media outlet at Spaced Out Radio or Spaced Out Radio Show. And you can download our show for free on any major podcast network, including iHeartRadio, iTunes, and Spotify. We will talk to you soon. Number one, thank you to all the listeners tuning on in tonight.
Every damn night from sea to shining sea.
Now,
join the lesbians in space.
she's angry that there's a lesbian in the WNBA. Is someone going to tell her?
Good evening, it's Walter Sterling. Throughout North America, radio show, fantastic. Have you been to Buc-ee's? Have you been to Buc-ee's? It's an interesting thing about Buc-ee's. If you've been there, you talk about it all the time. If you've never been there, you probably don't know about it. I won't bore you with this. This is a roadside attraction stop. Get everything you need, and you're thinking of any roadside attraction stop, anything you need, and it's not so. This is completely different. Let's start with the tanks. How many gas tanks are there? How many service tanks are there? 100. What? Yeah, there are 100 gas pumps. 100 gas pumps. Oh, that's different. And inside's about 200 yards long. Everything you could ever imagine that you'd want for your road trip is there, and a bunch of stuff you didn't even think of. And very impressive utilities, very impressive things at Buc-ee's, including restrooms with attendants. Your kids and your wife are safe there. It's immaculate. It smells great. Wow. There aren't many. There aren't many. They're mostly in the South. I think it's crept up to North Carolina. I think that's as far as it's come. Now they've threatened to put one in Pennsylvania. How lucky that would be. Wow. I would say that except for Buc-ee's, the roadside stops are disappointing because there's never anything new, never anything exciting. If they sell pizza, it's terrible. Even if they make it, it's terrible. I don't need a new CB radio. I haven't needed one since Convoy, since the record Convoy. I haven't needed one. And the food looks sketchy. I'm not going to eat any food made there. I'll tell you what I will eat. There are certain treats that you and I eat that we don't admit to, right? There are certain treats that when you can get one, you eat it alone in your car and you tell nobody about it. You don't tell your significant other or your girlfriend. You don't tell anybody about it. I have two things like that. I wonder what yours are. Hostess orange cupcakes. Not Hostess cupcakes. Hostess orange cupcakes. Orange cupcakes. And gas station chicken. I'm not talking about the chain places. I'm talking about independent operators who make fried chicken. That is the best chicken. Oh, my gosh. But I would never tell anybody in my family that. You're eating that? You don't even know what that is. How do you know that's chicken? It would be a bad conversation. It wouldn't go well. And the orange cupcakes, I have broken many a diet on the Hostess orange cupcakes, which are, in fact, terrible. They're smaller than they used to be. There's nothing resembling orange in it except the color of the icing. And then it's flavored with something that's supposed to be like, surprise, it's orange. No, really, we mean it. It's not orange. We don't know what it is. Don't want to know what it is. But that's the excitement. Those are the two things I eat that I'd never admit to anybody I live with. Do you have food like that? It's a shame, isn't it? Most things I can't eat or don't want to eat because of my diabetes. I'm very sensitive to sugar, not supposed to eat it, but, you know, orange cupcakes. I always drink it with milk. You need some hard protein with it, and milk is my hard protein. I've been working on my chicken parmesan recipe, and my chicken parm recipe is pretty simple. And the simpler I make it, the further I get away from a recipe card, the better it seems to get. This is all I do. You ready? Bobby Flay said, let the olive oil do the work. That's what I do. I let the olive oil do the work, Mr. Flay. I get chicken breasts. I pound the hell out of them. I put a little salt on them, and then they rest. Got to rest. Then I put them in a big frying pan with olive oil, and I let it cook medium-low for 4 minutes a side. Then I put them on a cookie tray, cover it with olive oil. I have put on a spice that's a combination of pepper, salt, and garlic. Pepper, salt, and garlic. That's all. The simpler I make it, the better it is. I slice up Parmesan cheese. I put it on top. And on top of that, I put Parmesan. I put mozzarella, and then I put on the Parmesan cheese. And I cook it for 12 minutes, 13 minutes sometimes. And it's spectacular. Walter Sterling's Chicken Parm.
Detective! Vicky Ferrari!
Hey, Walter. On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, the city of Philadelphia is facing a lawsuit from five white male police officers who claim they were unlawfully passed over for promotion due to diversity, equity, and inclusion policies in favor of candidates who scored worse on key performance metrics. The five officers had positive annual performance reviews and strong service records when they missed out on captain and lieutenant promotions during a November 2025 promotion cycle. According to a suit filed by the America First League, or AFL, promotions must be based on excellence, experience, and performance, not on race or sex of the candidate. The lawsuit filed Wednesday blames a 2021 City of Brotherly Love policy change that ditched a merit-based or so-called rule of two promotion system. Now, under the old rule, agencies were required to select between two of the highest-ranking candidates on eligibility lists for promotions. The rankings were based on scores on a civil service exam. During her time on the city council, Philadelphia Mayor Cheryl Parker led the charge to eliminate the policy, citing a 2018 report by Pew Charitable Trust that ruled distinctions between candidates of roughly equal qualifications can undermine a manager's ability to hire diverse and a talented workforce. At that time, Parker's team suggested that axing the rule of two would allow Philadelphia's Human Services Director to issue more flexible hiring guidelines to address questions as, what is the diversity of the incumbents in the job title to be announced? And where are the gaps in diversity? This past November, the Philadelphia Police Department elevated 10 cops from lieutenant to captain and 14 from sergeant to lieutenant. Three of the plaintiffs pursued the captain's post, and the other two wanted to be lieutenants. The trio seeking to become captain ranked between 8th and 13th on the captain eligibility list. The promotions drew backlash from the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge, which received complaints from members who believe they've been unlawfully passed over. Well, the New York City Police Department went through something like this in the 1980s, where a lot of the minority cops banded together and wanted to sue the city, claiming that the civil service exams were not fair. Well, what wound up happening is, during one of the late 1980 tests, they threw out the scores and basically promoted a lot of minority officers who didn't score as well as other candidates on the exam. What wound up happening is NYPD members quickly figured out who got promoted and who should have gotten promoted. And these sergeants were called quota sergeants, and the stigma followed them for the rest of their NYPD careers. The civil service process, people should be hired on merit, not skin color, race, equity, or diversity. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Thank you. All right, let's get a couple of demented Florida stories out of the way first, then we'll move on to the lighthearted stuff. First off, how crazy is it that a woman who lives with her boyfriend and her 11-year-old daughter is suspicious of the 11-year-old daughter for cheating with the boyfriend, as if it's not psycho enough that a mom would accuse her 11-year-old daughter of sleeping with mom's boyfriend. Local news here finishes the story.
But apparently this woman believed that it was and took her daughter into her car and at some point stabbed her more than a dozen times before taking her to Winnie Palmer Hospital, where obviously the girl was pronounced dead. The mother was arrested. She's facing a first-degree murder charge.
So there's all kinds of levels of crazy on this one. Strangely enough, they arrived at the hospital here 10:45 a.m. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
We're going to go over to Pensacola. The story starts with a 9-year-old who was adopted by a much older than average couple. And the claim in the story here is that she suffered horrific beatings from her adoptive parents. And this older couple had a friend who lived down the street named Veronica, and she loved beating children too. So one day, as she was helping her friends beat their adoptive 9-year-old daughter, the 320-pound Veronica sits on the 9-year-old girl for about 5 minutes. When she got off, she was not breathing. She had asphyxiated and died from a lack of oxygen. Don't worry, the 320-pound Florida woman has now been sentenced to life for sitting on the child. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Here's a fun one. Former NFL star Chad Johnson signs a contract with the semi-professional soccer club out of Boca Raton. Boca Raton FC signed the man formerly known as Chad Ochocinco. Do you remember this wide receiver from the Bengals who legally changed his name to Chad Ochocinco so he could put it on the back of his jersey? Great receiver, though. 6 Pro Bowl appearances. He had some great touchdown dances, known for some of his antics off the field as well. Now 41, starting a soccer career. And yeah, it's in Florida. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, we're going to Polk County, Florida. And I love this new trend where sheriffs and other law enforcement officers try and make a name for themselves on social media by being real bombastic or comedic about some of the criminals they're chasing. And that's what's happening here. Some criminal mastermind who broke into a Cricket Wireless store in Wynnetta had on a black tank top, blue jeans, and we also noticed he had red undies because he had problems keeping his pants up. And the sheriff's office poked a little fun about it on Facebook. They said he's about as skilled as securing his pants as he is about being a decent person. Seriously, you're going to break into someone's business and then flip them off on their security camera? Dude, so not cool. That's right. The sheriff's office called him dude. So the sheriff has dubbed the man the Red Briefs burglar. And I'm sure justice can't be far behind. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go down to Destin, where a visitor from Missouri, 27-year-old, was hanging out in Destin on the beach with a bunch of his friends. And then around 2 a.m., he went out on the 8th floor balcony to smoke a cigarette, accidentally falls off the balcony to his death. File this one under absolutely normal people from otherwise normal states going to Florida and end up doing something crazy.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, we go down to Castleberry, Florida. Florida man shows up at a Winn-Dixie, checks the place out, leaves, soon returns, but this time he's wearing a Spider-Man mask. He goes up to the liquor counter, steals about $150 in liquor and $420 in Newport cigarettes. Clearly, this criminal mastermind has been arrested before. He is a repeat offender, and he was easily identified because the only thing different about him than from when he had been in the store just a few minutes ago was a Spider-Man mask. Master of disguise, Florida man. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
We're going to go down to the Tampa area, and I'm just going to read you a headline. Bubba the Love Sponge sues Cox, claiming ratings sting operation. Okay, whatever that is, just hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, we go down to Fort Lauderdale. A Florida man has to go to the bathroom. When he lifts the lid on the toilet, there is a giant bright green iguana swimming in his toilet, so he freaked out, didn't know what to do. Called 911. Firefighter shows up. His name's Jeff. Jeff puts on the plastic gloves, reaches in the toilet, grabs the iguana. He took it outside and he let go of it. I understand it's unusual to find an iguana swimming in your toilet, but if you do, just reach down and grab him, take him outside, and open your hand. It is that easy, Florida man. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What? What is it?
For our next Florida story, we're going to go down to the Tampa area again. And around 100 years ago, there was a lab outside of Tampa, and it was working on the polio vaccine. And they used to experiment on spider monkeys and other types of primates. A group of monkeys escaped from this experimental science lab and populated the wild around Tampa. After they were causing some chaos on the mainland with the humans nearby, the Florida men rounded up the monkeys and sent them to an island that is in the middle of a river just north of Tampa. The monkeys don't like to swim. And so there have been residents of monkeys on this island for almost 100 years. Currently, there's a family of 5 spider monkeys, and they are there year-round, and you can actually take a canoe or a kayak up close to Monkey Island but you're not allowed to get on Monkey Island, and you're not allowed to interact with the monkeys. However, it's a very popular sightseeing destination, and there's a local resort that takes care of the monkeys and keeps them fed on a regular basis. And that's Monkey Island. That sounds awesome. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
All right, for our final Florida story of the week, this is an update on a Florida story I actually brought to you last episode. We return to Port Richey, Florida. Last week, I told you about the Florida mayor that was arrested in a SWAT raid because of unlicensed medical practice and then some other corruption charges thrown on top of that. Well, I am here to tell you just a week later that the guy who took over the mayor's job and has been the acting mayor of Port Richey, Florida, his name's Terrence. He has been arrested.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Shock here in Port Richey tonight. You know, this recent arrest actually connects back to the former mayor's arrest. So now you have not one, but two mayors behind bars.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Every night, smutty books, lusty books, get cozy with the outlandom of falsum wandom. Falsum wandom, study books, lusty books, get cozy with the outlandom.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Hunting Astrid. With one last gulp, Tabitha finished off her drink. Want to head downstairs and dance? For anyone else, the answer would be no. But since you're asking, I'll make an exception. Astrid took several more sips from her glass and set the remains on a nearby table. I'm warning you, I'm a terrible dancer. She grinned. Everybody says that. I've never heard someone claim to be a good dancer. Despite her insecurities, she laughed. Convince me there's so many people down there, no one will be paying attention to me. Tabitha snaked an arm around her waist, letting her hand linger on her hip. Remember, I only care about us tonight, she said. Come on, let's go. With one hand on the small of her back, she guided Astrid to a wide set of steps leading to the lower level. They inched into the mass of people, staking their claim on a tiny, unoccupied spot on the glowing floor. Music resonated throughout Astrid's entire body, the insistent bass vibrating underneath her feet. The frenzied atmosphere threatened to overwhelm her senses, but she remained focused on one person. Tabitha raised her arms and moved in time with the beat, hips swaying from side to side. Astrid did her best to forget the other people around her and match the fluid motions. Someone to her left bumped into her, throwing her off balance, while a second person tried to push between them as they shoved their way through the crowd. Whoops! Tabitha called out. She grabbed Astrid's wrist and pulled her closer, their bodies colliding. Let's not get separated. She took her other hand and squeezed, not yielding in her grasp. Her wordless smile persuaded Astrid to join in as she began dancing again. The surrounding chaos kept them pressed close together, and fire unfurled over Astrid's skin. Every touch erased her inhibitions. Every point of contact left her wanting more. See, you've got nothing to worry about. Tabitha spun her around, resting their interlocked fingers at her waist. She held her tight as they moved in unison, heat looming between them. And you feel amazing, she whispered near her ear. Astrid closed her eyes. The other woman's breath tickled her neck as her chest flattened against her back. Through the flimsy fabric of her dress, Abatha's hands left a searing imprint, and she imagined them roaming all over her. She exaggerated the next swivel of her hips, pushing backward, and was rewarded with a throaty chuckle and a strengthened embrace. The music slowed. Several people in the crowd groaned, and some left the area, leaving mostly couples behind. Astrid slowly turned around. Tabitha's grasp on her waist remained firm. She tilted her head down, her black hair cascading forward as she resumed her movements. Her dancing had calmed to match the new tempo, yet remained as sensual and enticing as before. Astrid ran her hands up her shoulders, lacing her fingers behind her back. The velvety skin bare to her touch, exposed by the revealing tank top, made her shiver. Tabitha's fluid motions never ceased, her relentless grip encouraging her to synchronize their rhythms. Everything around her blurred into a surreal haze as Tabitha reached up to brush her hair away from her face. A feathery touch of her fingertips on her cheek sent another wave of excitement rippling throughout her. She knew what was coming, and inhaled slowly in a futile effort to dampen the thudding of her heartbeat in her chest. Their lips met in a gentle kiss. She savored the softness of Tabitha's mouth, tasting hints of the fruity drinks they'd consumed earlier in the evening. Long fingers tangled in the ends of her hair, holding her in place, while their tongues engaged in playful exploration. Somewhere deep in the recesses of Astrid's mind, she couldn't believe she was standing in the middle of a busy nightclub, kissing a woman she barely knew. But her desire won out over rational thought. She needed this. All too soon, the song ended, replaced by another fast-paced electronic beat. Tabitha broke the kiss, but leaned her forehead against Astrid's. "We could keep dancing, grab another drink, or get out of here," she said. "What do you say?" At that moment, Astrid would have accepted an invitation to follow her anywhere in the galaxy, but a new idea popped into her head. "I know a place we can go," she said, nodding toward the steps. "I think I should stop there for tonight, but you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Hunting Astrid, which is available at Amazon for Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brook, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, program originated by Chris Olivero, long-suffering executives David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker, with respect Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.